Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me on the podcast today. This podcast is an open door for those seeking a little hope that will spark a fire in their lives. Welcome to Spread Hope Like Fire. I'm your host, Tony the Beat. People ask me why the beat? Because the beat always goes on. I bring this podcast to the world every Tuesday and Thursday of each and every week. You can get this podcast several ways. iTunes, the Google Play Store, SoundCloud, Overcast, and even listening to it on YouTube if you want. Some ways that you, the listeners, can support this podcast is rate, review, Facebook this bad boy out, Instagram it out, Snapchat it out, text a friend, Twitter it. Whatever you can to get this message across to people and have them come join us on this podcast. Also, this is a listener-supported podcast, which is supported by listeners just like you. Be sure to head over to the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. Our guest this week is my good friend Fabiola Frosto. She will be sharing with us what she went through watching her mom battle breast cancer and sadly passing away in 2006. We are continuing the theme of grief this week on the show. I'd like to share a little of what my friend Michael Scott said about the topic of grief. He says, society teaches us that having feelings and crying is bad and wrong. Well, that's baloney, because grief isn't wrong. There is such a thing as good grief. Just ask Charlie Brown. But if you're struggling with the loss of someone, you are not alone. There is no set time frame, as I said before, that someone has in order to grieve. Grieving can be a good thing. It's over someone you love, someone you shared your life with, someone that meant that much to you, someone that you meant that much to. We build bonds with others. Parents, especially mothers, are some of the strongest bonds we will ever have. We will never make another human being smile like we make our mother smile. We will never put that glimmer in another person's eye like we do with our mother. I'm happy to have been able to sit down with Fabi and talk about her mother and what it has taken her to feel some comfort and acceptance with the passing of her mom. Okay, so I'm here with my first guest. Today's topic is bereavement. Everyone has to go through this process of death and losing loved ones. Parents especially is a hard thing to deal with. I know that I have a big fear of losing my mom, so I have Fabi here with me. She's a good friend of mine and wanted to talk about what she went through with her mom when she passed away and how she dealt with it, the experiences she went through. I want to introduce her. This is Fabi.
Hello, everybody.
And you have an organization, you guys...
Oh, yeah. We have an organization that was started in memory of our mother. It's called Viva Fuerte. This year, it will be in memory of both our parents now, because my dad just recently passed. But we'll get into that in a later episode.
Yeah, we have this set up in a certain way. We're going to just talk about her mom passing away and the struggles that she went through. I know it was my neighbor is over here pounding away, building a new house, apparently.
Just in case you hear anything funny.
Can you spell out the organization so that people know how to, like, can you go on Facebook and join it or?
Oh, yeah. So we have a Facebook group that is called Viva Fuerte, or I don't know if it's under Team Viva Fuerte. We started as Team Viva Fuerte, but now I believe it's just Viva Fuerte, which in English translates into, like, live strong. But if you want to look us up, it is V-I-V-A-F-U-E-R-T-E.
And you guys have a event every year?
Oh, yeah. So we do, it's a karaoke dinner night that we host every year at the Boys and Girls Club here in Santa Maria, in which we use, like, the funds for that to give out a scholarship. Last year, we gave out our first scholarship to a high school student, and this year will be our second year giving out a scholarship.
And if they wanted more information, where do they go? Oh, yeah, Facebook.
Facebook. Or you could...
You could call her.
You could look me up on Facebook as well. It's under Fabiola Frausto, if you would like more information. We also have an Instagram account that is under...
She came prepared. She's on her phone looking. So just a minute.
It's under Team Viva Fuerte. So you could look us up on Instagram on there also. If you have any questions, you could follow us and send us an inbox, and we'll answer your questions. We created it in memory of our mom. We started it when we all decided to do the San Luis Obispo was doing a cancer run, I think. And my brother decided to get a group of us together. We made t-shirts, and it started from there. So it started with a 5K.
So when did your mom pass away?
So my mom passed away November 16th, 2006. She was diagnosed 2 years before that, while my dad was also going through... He had suffered a massive heart attack. And while he was in recovery, they diagnosed my mother with breast cancer. While she felt a pain in her breast, obviously, when she was at work, she went to her general doctor, and they referred her to another doctor here in town that would do a biopsy. And since my mother was mostly Spanish-speaking, I went with her. So I sat with her through the biopsy. They told us that they would have the results in a couple of days. And when this was happening, I was still, while I was working at Target, I was usually, like, closing. And I remember I was at the fitting room that night, and I had a missed call. Well, obviously, I sent it to voicemail because I was working. When I got off, I was driving home, and I listened to it, and it was her doctor, the one that had performed the biopsy. It was her telling me that what they found was malignant and that we would have to proceed with chemo and all of that, and... But she didn't want to, she wanted, like, for us to go to the office with her and talk about it. And I just remember, like, blacking out for a moment. And while I was driving, because I was listening to this while I was driving, and literally almost crashing into that 7-Eleven that's right there. And so, like, all the way home, I was, you know, I was thinking, like, how do I go home and tell my mother that she has breast cancer? And I remember getting home and, like, just the look on my face, like, the first person that I saw was Nestor, was my younger brother. And I went into his room and I closed the door and I said, hey, like, mom's doctor called, the cyst that she has is malignant. And, like, what do I do? Like, how do you go into the room and tell your mother that she has breast cancer? And so we just, like, we stood there, just, like, looked at each other. I had to, like, get my composure together. And then I went into my parents' room. And she was just there, you know. She had just gotten off of work. And she was folding clothes, and I think she saw the look on my face, and she knew, because I walked into the room, and I closed the door, and I told her, you know, I said, Mom, the doctor called, and unfortunately, like, it's bad. It has cancerous cells. Like, I don't know what I thought her reaction was going to be, but I don't, like, if I would have gotten that news, I would have totally broken down and lost it. But she just looked at me and she's like, okay, what do we do? And in my mind, I was like, oh my God, this woman is amazing. She didn't even let it get to her. She was just like, what do we do from here? So after that, the chemo started. She had surgery to remove her breast. And chemo continued. I remember begging her not to buzz her hair because they told her she was going to lose it, obviously. And there had been nights where she was already losing it, and she had told me, she was like, I'm just going to call your uncle, and I'm going to have him do it. And I was like, no, Mom, please, no. And sure enough, one day I came home from work, and there she was in the living room with her buzz cut. So yeah, after that, more chemo started. They did a routine scan on her, which then showed that the cancer had spread into her lungs. She had a big tumor on her liver, and she just kept fighting it. We kept going to chemo. They tried a new chemo, I think, that was coming out. I don't remember the name of it now, but the doctor had said that it was new, that it had had good results, and that he wanted to try it because it had spread. He wanted to be a little more aggressive with it to see if he could stop it from further spreading. But unfortunately, that was not the case. And her health declined. Obviously, she ended up in the hospital. And mind you, like, while this is going on, I'm in Oxnard going to school. So it was pretty hard. I would come see her on the weekends, but I knew, like, I had to leave. I would either leave, like, late Sunday night or early Monday morning to make it to work. So it was really hard. So, you know, family effort. Then my brother stepped in, took her to her chemos and her doctor's appointment.
Yeah, and I remember working with you, and you left to go to Oxnard. That was not a good time. All my friends were leaving me. I remember you telling me that your mom had cancer, and I didn't know what to tell you. I didn't know, like, you know me, I make jokes about everything, and I think I made, like, an inappropriate joke and pissed you off.
Probably. Sounds about right.
Yeah, so I'm not good. Like, I'm going to become a therapist, and so I'm learning to
be appropriate now.
Be appropriate. And not, but I remember, like, we were sitting there, and I gave you a bat mitzvah card because you left.
Yeah. You told me you're going to put sugar in my gas tank.
Yeah, so you couldn't leave. And, yeah, you told me your mom had cancer, and I didn't know what to do, and I made that inappropriate joke. I know I made an inappropriate joke because you left. You stopped talking to me for the day. And, it's just, I remember still talking to you, though, on through MySpace. We had MySpace at the time.
MySpace, wow.
And
going way back.
I remember I was working with your brother, too, still, and I didn't know what to tell him either. Like, I knew that there were certain times he'd come in and
he would be, like, very quiet or distant from me.
Uh-huh.
Or from everyone, and he would just kind of, like, do his own thing or whatever while we were working. And I appreciate that you're talking about this. I mean, it's a hard topic. I don't know what I would do. And like you said, your mom was... I would probably, like, just curl up into a ball if something, like, my kids came in and told me, oh, well, you have cancer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be like, well, see you later.
Yeah. yeah.
And...
But, like, that was the thing about her. Like, she just... I don't want to say she just wanted to keep going like nothing was wrong, but I think she didn't want us to change what we were doing in our lives because of what was going on with her. Because before she got diagnosed, I had already started looking into going to school in Oxnard, and when we found out that she had cancer, I told her, you know, I'll cancel my plan. I'll stay here and I'll take care of you. And she told me no, that she wanted me to finish school, that she didn't want me to change my plans because of what was going on. And I told her that, I was like, no, Mom, like, I'll stay. Because at this point, too, my dad had, he had suffered a massive heart attack, and he was at home, and he was recuperating, and he wasn't doing very good either. He became very depressed and was just in bed, didn't want to eat. So, I mean, it was really hard for me to make the decision to go, but my mother was very insistent that I finished school, and so I went, and that's why I said that my brothers stepped in, and they would go with her to her appointments and do all that, and then I would come home on the weekends and, you know, be there for both of them.
How'd you deal with moving away? Like, do you remember the last day at your house before you left?
Yeah. And it was the first time I'd ever, like, packed up my stuff. And it wasn't, like, everything, obviously, because...
And it wasn't forced.
Yeah. It was like, you're getting kicked out. I knew that was still my home, but I was leaving, and I cried, obviously. But my mom was like, don't cry. You know, we're, like... This is always your house. We're still going to be here. You're coming on the weekends. And she's like, there's no need to cry. But I remember crying the whole way. But then, like, getting there, I was like, okay, like, you came because you have to go to school. So you're going to go to school. Finish school. And... Funny thing is, when I was here, I would get okay grades and think I was, like, trying, you know? But it's funny, like, when you don't have that many friends to where you go, all the dedication you spend in school. Because funny story, I ended up being valedictorian, which scared the crap out of me, by the way.
What school did you go to?
Well, of, like, my major.
Oh.
Which freaked me out, too. I was like, oh, I need to stop getting what... No, I don't want attention drawn to me.
How many graduated?
In my class, I was
kidding,
like a
I'm
little
kidding.
Bit. About two. I'm just kidding.
Just me.
Just me. No. I think it was thanks to her, you know.
So this whole time you were living in Oxnard, did you know that your... Like, when did you know that your mom was the point where they couldn't cure her? Or did you...
Well, after the doctor told us that it had spread, her health was declining. I felt very guilty about it, but I think I saw how she was declining. And of course, nobody wants to be like, okay, like this is it. This is what's, this is what's going to happen. You know, you want it to work. You want it to get better. You want it to turn around and be like, hey, the tumors are getting smaller. But unfortunately, you know, that wasn't the case. And she would be taken to the emergency room because she wasn't feeling good. And I remember one time coming home for the weekend, and she had gotten a toothache, and since she couldn't have an infection because her body would obviously, the chemo broke down everything, and she wouldn't withstand it. She had to have her tooth pulled, like, immediately, so that it wouldn't cause an infection in her. And I remember coming home. I remember nobody being home. It was just her. And she was in bed. And, you know, I came home and I asked her how she was feeling. She told me that she was done, that she didn't want to get chemo anymore, that she was just done. She was done trying. She had had it. And I remember, obviously, me hearing that come from her after seeing her, like, not give up and try and try and try. I completely, like, broke down and was crying on her lap. And then I think her seeing me cry kind of gave her that, like, that little push to be like, okay, no, like, I take back what I said. Cause she told me, she was like, she told me not to worry, that she was just gonna keep trying. She was just really tired, and that was like her little moment of weakness, you know. But it's funny how, I don't know if it was like God telling me that she was gonna be okay and that we were gonna be okay. The night before, my brother called me to tell me that my mom was not responsive anymore and that I should, you know, come home. I had a dream. I had a dream about her. And in the dream, I come home just like the day that I had when it was just her by herself. And I walk in, and my brother and my dad are on the couch, and they're staring at, like, what an x-ray, I guess, would be of lungs. And they were just completely, like, white, which meant that her lungs were completely taken over by the cancer. And in that dream, my dad tells me, you know, like Mija, you know, like, this is it. Your mom, you know, they told your mom that the cancer has completely taken over her lungs and there's nothing more that they can do. And I tell him, no, that's not true. And I run to my parents' room, and she's just sitting on the bed, like, on her side of the bed. And she tells me, like, what's wrong? And I said, Mom, like, don't act like you don't know what's wrong. My dad told me what the doctor told you. And I saw the x-ray of your lungs. Like, don't, for her, like, not to keep it from me. And she looked at me, like, dead in the eyes, and she said, Mija, I'm fine. She tells me, tell your dad that I'm fine, that nothing's going to happen. And after she said that, I woke up, and I'm by myself in my room in Oxnard, and immediately start crying, and I'm like, no, like, this can't be it, you know, like, in disbelief. And so I started praying, like, I started asking God to, like, calm my mind and my heart, and I fell back asleep. And then my brother called me that same morning, and that's when he told me that they had taken my mom to the although she was in the hospital and that she was not responsive, so that I needed to go back home. And they didn't give her very long. They thought she was going to go that night, but she ended up staying with us for a couple more days. Two of her brothers were on their way from Texas, and we kind of knew that she was waiting for them. You know, we kind of knew that she was going to wait for her younger brother to get here to see her before she passed. And we had the blessing, I guess you could say, for her to wake up from the little coma that she was in, and to talk to us for one more time. She made us promise to take care of our dad and to be good kids and to finish school and to do everything like that. And I remember after she said that, it was the same thing again. You know, she would start falling asleep, and she would wake up a little bit, but it was for very short periods of time. But after that, yeah, she just fell back asleep. And I had this feeling inside me that the moment that none of us were there, meaning like my dad and my brothers and I, that she was going to go. And I kind of had this feeling since I drove home and I was in the hospital room with her. So I would make it a point for somebody to be there with her, like, at all times. And I remember I slept on the hospital floor that night, me and my brother did, and my younger brother had taken my uncles to the house to take showers and rest a little bit. And I had told my other brother, I said, I'm going to go home and take a shower too. I'll be back. But I told him, don't leave until I get back. And he said, okay. And I remember being in the bathroom, like getting out of the shower, being in the bathroom, and I hear a car pull up, and I knew it. I knew that it was my brother. And I heard two doors slam. So I knew he had brought my dad, and I said, this is it. Like, she's going to go right now. And so I hurry up and, like, get dressed and run out of the bathroom. And I remember just screaming, like, why are you here? I told him, I told you not to come until I came back. And he's like, it's fine. Like, dad was tired. And I said, you don't understand. She's going to go right now. I said, because we're all here. And sure enough, the phone rings right after I said it. And nobody wanted to pick it up. And I went and I picked it up. And it was my cousin's wife. And she said, Fabi, you need to get back to the hospital. Your mom just passed. So I hung up the phone. And like, they knew it because they saw the look on my face. And my dad gathered us all together. And he made us say the Our Father. And that prayer never hurt so much in my life like it did in that moment, because of the line of, like, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And that's when my anger started towards God. Like, why my mom? you know, she never did anything to anybody. She never had, like, hurtful words to say to anybody, you know? And after that, people would tell me, like, that God only takes the good ones. I guess in some way to be of a comfort, but I don't know, like, that would make me even more mad. I'd be like, why? There's other people that are so bad or that have life and don't cherish it, don't take care of it, are out doing harmful things to people, you know? And somebody that has never had bad intentions towards anybody gets taken like that. And it took me a very long time to come to terms with her passing. And I strayed away from my faith for a very long time. I didn't go to church for like a year. And it's still very hard, like, to go to church. I always, well, not hard, it's more peaceful now, but I always still cry and things like that. But it's more out of, now it's more out of the love that I have for God and not resentment or anger or sad memories. It's more like out of a peaceful place.
I remember that that day your mom passed away, that I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and that I kept saying, oh man, I hope Fabby's mom's okay. I said, it's just, I heard that she was in the hospital, and they didn't know that they had told her that she only had a few days to live or something. And he had told me, he was like, dude, you didn't hear? And I was like, she passed away? And he said, yeah. He's like, she passed away. I don't know if it was the nighttime or the daytime or the evening. I think it was that evening. Mm-hmm. And I remember calling you, and I was like, you didn't answer. And I was like, why am I calling her? I don't even know what to tell her. And I'm like, I'm probably just going to piss her off. I've never had friends that had parents die or someone close die. And I, for some reason, I was calling you. And I was like, oh, like. And then I remember you like text me, you're like, I don't want to talk. And I was like, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure you're okay. And like, you never replied ever. And so I had text Nestor, and Nestor never replied either. And I didn't know what to say. And I have bad death anxiety. And I remember your guys' mom's, what do you guys have, the mass? Or mm-hmm. Yeah, so you guys were going to have the mass. And I remember I'm like, oh, I'm going to go. I have to go. And I didn't go because I was like, I don't know what to say. I'm going to piss people off. I'm going to, like, freak out. I don't do good with, like, death. And so, like, I just sent you guys a text and told you I was sorry. I wasn't going to make it. And I was a terrible friend. And that ended our friendship.
Yeah. We didn't talk for 10 years then.
I had never experienced it, never knew what it was like, never knew what to say until Shirelli's mom passed away. And, like, the things you were saying are the things that I experienced with her mom, because her mom suddenly passed away, just suddenly. She had a brain aneurysm, and I remember she got the surgery, she came out, she was fine, she was telling everybody hi, and she was like, where's T? And she wanted to know where I was, and I thought we had a a good relationship, but like just her asking for me out of surgery was kind of, it made me feel good, and I was like, okay, she's gonna do good, but I mean, she ended up with pneumonia, and I remember sitting in the little area where you wait on the second floor, and the doctor told us, let's go into the private waiting room, and up until then, they were doing everything they could to help fight the pneumonia, but like getting the news that like someone is gonna die, like you don't. I remember standing there with Shirley's uncle at the window, and we both turned our backs to everyone, and we were standing at the window looking out, and we were both crying, and we were looking at each other from like our peripheral vision, and like we didn't know what to. I had no. That's just a moment I share with him, is like looking out crying, and I was thinking, I wish I could do something to change this, but there's nothing they can do. And we spent the night there too, her last night there, and it was up to Shirley, because Shirley had the power of attorney and she knew what her mom wanted, so they took her off life support, and that was just but we were there around her and we watched her pass away, which I'd never seen someone die. And I'm not a religious man, but I'm more of like faith in God and everything. But I remember I was pissed, and I was in that chapel in the hospital, and I was like screaming and yelling and cussing God out, and I was like, why does this have to happen? Like this isn't supposed to happen. Like, you're ruining everything. And so it's like our pets' heads are falling off. I mean,
but I think that's understandable. Like, I think, like, when obviously when how you were saying how like I didn't answer the phone and how it was like I didn't want to talk.
Yeah, you're being a jerk.
Well, because I didn't know, like, I didn't know how to deal with it. Obviously, like, you know, I had lost my mom. I didn't know what to say, and I didn't. Like, what, you know, what do I say? Like, people are just, I'm so sorry. And
yeah,
it was just, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's awkward. Like, I still get people, well, I remember, like, after she passed away and I came back home, like, people would see me at work. And I swear to you, like, they would look at me like I had something wrong, like, oh man, I just, let me turn the corner right here, like, to avoid me, because they didn't know what to say. And I think that's hard to deal with too, because, and this happened after like both my parents like passed away, I didn't want to go out, and I didn't want to see anybody, because I wanted to avoid those awkward moments. Like, I don't want to put anybody else through it, to be like, hi, like, I'm so sorry, or, you know, like, avoid me like the plague or something. So it's just, it's very hard to deal with. But I think when I lost my mom, it was a lot harder. Even though my father's death was so sudden, and with my mom, like, we knew it was going to happen. We knew it was coming.
Yeah, how do you prepare? Like, how do you prepare?
I think it was just,
someone's going to pass. Like, oh, your mom's going to die, and she has 3 days to live.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how does a person comprehend that? Like, I think I would like to know when I die, but, like, for other people, like, I take it as, like, like, when Shirley's mom died, I took it as you cherish every small moment you have with people, and not just your parents, but like everybody you love, make sure that you're always letting them know that you love them, because you don't know if that person's gonna die that day, the next day, the day after. Like, we didn't. I just don't know how to explain it. But I guess you have both sides of it. You have, oh, your mom's gonna pass away in a day or two, or. And Shirley's had that too. Well, your mom only has so much time, and she didn't wake up from the coma she was in. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you saying she woke up and she told you all this. And I know that Shirelli would probably... Well, I would have wanted to talk to her one last time just mm-hmm. to talk to
her. I think it would have just been, like, closure, you know? Because I think that's what helped us a lot, too, is the fact that we did get to talk to her and she did get to tell us what she wanted for us, like, in the future. Because I think if that wouldn't have happened, it would have been a lot harder to come to terms with.
So you said that, like, I went through of, like, questioning God, not knowing why, and then you have that anger. I know a lot of people that have faith, whatever it may be, have that anger. How did you get through it?
My dad helped in a big, big way. And I know that, well, you knew my dad, and he was very...
Yeah, he thought I made porno for a living.
He did. He was a very, very religious man, and he had so much faith in God. And just him talking about it. And it was even me, like, going to him and saying, this is how I feel. Like, I'm angry, and why her, and... why cancer and all this stuff, you know? And he would just tell me, like, we're all on borrowed time. And he told me that the only thing certain in our life is death, and that everybody has a time and a date and we don't know, but that we have to be prepared for that one, like, for when that day comes, and be okay with God and be okay in our faith, you know, that when we do pass, that we'll get to heaven and that we'll be able to see our loved ones again. And, you know, he told me, he's like, It's going to take you the time it's going to take you. But that I needed to make my peace, and that I needed to get back on the right path and, you know, go to church again and do all that. And I remember the first time that I had gone to church. Because in my mind, like, when I would think about before, like, going to church, like, all I remember was, I'm like, no, I'm just going to have flashbacks. Like, I'm going to see, you know, her casket, her being there. That's all I'm going to remember. Like, and that was a big fear of mine, that I didn't want to go to church for that same reason. Cause I was like, no, I'm just going to see my mom in her casket, and how am I going to get through it? Like, how am I going to get through mass when I know that's all I'm going to see? And I remember the first time that I went back, I remember, like, crying through the whole mass. And it wasn't bad crying. It was just hymns that they sang that just got to me. Like, the words got to me. And I just told myself, like, no, you have to come back. The love that God has for you is so immense. And that's what you need to get through this. You need God. And so I did. I started going back every Sunday, or tried to at least, but I would go back. And then I still would cry. I would go to Mass and I would cry. And then I figured if I went to English Mass, I wouldn't know any of the hymns, so I wouldn't cry. So then I started going to English Mass. But it's, you know, it's still the same. Like, there's sometimes scriptures that are read that, you know, hit me, like, really hard, and I still cry. But it's not, like I said, it's not like a bad cry. It's just... to think that God loves you so much and to think that, like, you're worthy of that love is just, I don't know, like, to me it's beautiful, and I think that's why, like, I think that's why I cry now. And that's what, like, that's what my father taught me. Because he had, like I said, he had an immense love for God and so much faith in him. And he was the one that got me. They got me through it. They got me, I think they got me prepared too for his passing, you know? Because having that faith back and having all that, I think prepared me to deal with my dad's passing a lot more.
I remember you telling me that he kicked you off the couch at one point.
Oh yeah, it was so bad. So after my mom passed away, I was done. I didn't want to go back to work.
But they made sure you came.
I know. I would sleep all day on the couch, because at night I would stay up and I would watch TV. But I was just asleep on the couch for I don't even know how long. And he obviously was tired of it. And he came and he told me, he's like, hey, is this what you're going to do for the rest of your life? And I was mad and I told him, yes, leave me alone. And he's like, no, he's like, you're wrong. You need to get up. And he's like, and you need to keep living your life. But I didn't want to. I was very depressed. I was very, like, feeling sorry for myself, because I didn't have my mom anymore. And I remember going, I was at, I don't remember whose baseball game it was, but it was at Hancock College. And I don't know, something just hit me. And I literally, like, went into the parking lot, and that's when I called. I think I talked to Susie that day at Target or something. And I told them that I was ready to come back. But even when I came back, that's when Rose was still there. And I remember I was in the women's department and ready to wear. And I was spaced out. And I was just out of it. And she's talking to me and I can see her. She was standing in front of me and I could see her, but I had no idea what she was saying. And then she was like, hey, snap out of it. And I was like, oh, sorry. And then she told me, she's like, why did you even come back? She's like, you're not, she told me, she's like, I don't think you were ready to come back yet. And I told her, no, I said, I needed to, like, I don't know, but I think I spent like a month on that couch. Like, my dad was right. Like, I needed to get my butt back in gear, you know, and continue with life.
What point? Is there like a point that you can pinpoint in your life where you came out of the darkness and went into the light, where that darkness, because you know when you go through things, it's like a dark, you're in a dark place. Is there like a certain event or certain something that like just clicked for you, or is it just been over time? Like, how have you gotten through it, over time, or is it just like a certain event?
I think it's just over time, because I don't think there has been an event where, like, I'm completely out of it, or like I think I'm free of it, because I still have days where I get into that depression, and sometimes it'll only last me a day, or sometimes I feel like that for a while. But I think what's helped me the most is not being afraid to talk about it and not being afraid to share how I feel. Because I think a lot of people, and sometimes, and I do it too, sometimes I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to feel like a burden to anybody, or I don't want to feel like oh, like, I don't have time to listen to you. Like, I don't want to get that response. But luckily, like, I have a great support group and a great group of friends that are always there to listen. And even though I feel sometimes like, oh, like, it's the same thing again, you know, because sometimes I do, like, I'll just, I don't know, like, I could be driving and then I just start crying. And I know it's because, like, I miss my mom or I miss my dad. But before, I think I would just keep it to myself and I wouldn't really say anything. But now, like, when I feel like that, I do reach out and I do want to share how I'm feeling, because I know if I don't, I'll get back into that depression and into that dark place where I don't want to talk to anybody, where I don't want to do anything, where I just want to stay home and be by myself, but I can't.
Watch people eat.
Yeah. Watch a mukbang on YouTube. I don't want to do that to myself. You know, I don't want to live my life not doing stuff because of getting into a depression like that.
Yeah, depression is not a, it's not a fun thing. But as we wrap it up, what was your mom's name?
My mom's name was Liduvina Perez Frausto.
And in English?
Liduvina Perez Frausto.
I'm kidding. It's just because I can't say it in Spanish. Also, mention, what is the Viver Fred? I can't say it. So.
Viva Fuerte is the foundation that we have. We are on Facebook under Team Viva Fuerte. It's a group. And then also on Instagram under Team Viva Fuerte as well.
And the annual karaoke night is in November?
Is in November, yes.
Usually on my birthday.
Oh, yeah. We've been trying to get him there so we can sing happy birthday, but he never makes it.
I'm usually depressed.
But yeah, it'll be November of this year at the Boys and Girls Club. Date is still up in the air.
Probably my birthday.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank our guest, Fabby, today for being our first guest and the support she has given me with this podcast. I felt honored to have been able to sit down and remember her mom and spread that ripple in the water of time, to have her memory reach many others. I hope that her story helped you if you're experiencing grief over the loss of a loved one. I encourage you all to continue the conversation on Twitter. You can reach me at TonyTheBeat85 and be sure to hashtag that tweet with spread hope like fire. And with that, I would like to kind of just get a little more open with you guys and the listeners to let you know what's going on in my life. This week, I got a little bit of bad news about my mom and her health, and it hopefully has a good outcome, and it's really set my anxiety spiraling out of control again, and I think it's a sign that I need to gain control over my anxiety. Hopefully everything turns out for the best. I've been praying a lot and asking God for him to make sure that my mom's outcome to this is positive, and that we have her around for a lot of more years. And it just makes me think that, you know, hopefully things come out negative. And like my friend Michael Scott also says that in the medical world, negative means positive. But in the real world, negative means bad. So I hope that in the medical world, it comes out negative and everything's good. And I ask that everybody pray and keep my mom
in your thoughts and prayers. And I believe that prayer is a very powerful tool that we use to connect with God. And I'm leaning on God a lot right now, trying to. And this podcast has given me an outlet and hopefully helping others, as I need help too right now. And life isn't easy, and this is why I started this podcast, like I always say. But while I was writing up the regular show notes and everything, I was remembering a poem I had written a few years. Back then, my mom was suffering from, they didn't know what. It was very, she had a pain in her stomach, and they did every test known to man on her and still could not come to a diagnosis. And we had to go down to the UCLA Medical Center and do a test on her pancreas because they thought maybe she had pancreatic cancer because she had a bump on there. I remember sitting in the waiting room for many, it seemed like hours, but it was only an hour and a half. And I had written something that I want to share with you. It's a poem, and it's how I express how I feel about my mom and how I felt in that moment. And I hope that maybe you can share this with your mom, and hopefully you're listening with your mom if you're lucky enough to have her around. I hope that it brings comfort to those listening. It brings comfort to me. So the poem is called Once Upon a Time. Once upon a time, you were here to guide me and to protect me. You taught me love. You taught me strength. You taught me life. Once upon a time, we lived in a castle built upon what are now treasured memories. My hand you would hold. My fears you would banish. My pain you would heal. Once upon a time, I was your baby. Time passed on and I held your hand. Your fears I battled. Your pain I wish I could take for you. Once upon a time lived a mother. I called her mom. You were lucky to have met her, but she is gone now. She lives on forever. She is gone, but not far. One day we will meet again. Until then, you can live in my heart. Once upon a time, I still miss you, Mom. So again, I ask for everybody's prayers, and hopefully I can come back on this podcast and share some good news. So I hope to see you all back Tuesday as we talk about the topic of trauma. I'll be focusing on all the mass shootings that have occurred and get a little deeper on why and how mental health plays a role in these events and how many suffer greatly after surviving such traumatic experiences. I want to thank Fabi again for being our first guest. For myself, I'm Tony the Beat, signing off, and I hope you have a good weekend. Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.